So there's a Vietnamese Zen teacher by the name of Thich Nhat Hanh, many of you familiar with him, who says that if we meditate, it means we need to smile a lot. And he encourages his students to smile, just a very gentle, subtle smile, just like I invited during the end of our sitting, encourages his students to smile when meditating. And a student asked me once, you know, they heard this from another teacher and, you know, was wondering, what's that all about? What's this smiling all about? So those of you who are on my email list may have seen my most recent blog post that went out yesterday about smiling. And this question that I've really been sitting with these days of, you know, how do we find a genuine smile with so much difficulty and suffering in the world and so much uncertainty in major ways, whether it's uncertainty in the institutions of our society, politically, economically, or the uncertainty in terms of the life support systems of our planet with climate change. And particularly then this teaching of, you know, smile when you're meditating. It can sound a little misattuned. So particularly when you consider the starting point of the Buddha's teachings as being the first noble truth is the truth of stress and suffering and difficulty, you know? So smile. Where is that coming from? So this later this week, I'm teaching a whole day at Spirit Rock on happiness in the Buddhist path. What does it mean to be happy? And so I am kind of warming up a little here. So I thought we could explore this theme of happiness tonight. What does it mean to be happy? What does it mean to smile when the world's on fire? Which is the question I asked in my blog post. And what does the Buddhist path have to teach us about happiness? I thought I would start just with a couple of reflections and then do something a little bit different, which is to invite us to actually have some discussion, which is a really wonderful way to practice the Dhamma. So in our communities, we often do this kind of thing. Right? There's like one person up here talking at you and you're listening and receiving, and you know, you can come here for months, and if you don't come early to help set up or come to the social, you know, never say more than two words to the other folks around you. And so building community is a really key part of this path, and discussing and exploring and debating the teachings are also a very central way that we learn, not just by listening or reflecting on our own, but actually exploring stuff together. So I'll just suggest a few themes, and we'll have some time to talk in, you know, threes, fours, and then we'll come back together. I'll share some more, and then we can have some discussion and questions. So I think the first thing to put out there, to point out, is that even though the Buddha's teaching starts with an acknowledgement of suffering, that's not where it ends, right? The whole point is to become free from the suffering and pain and stress that's unnecessary, that we add to life, to start to understand where that comes from. So even though it starts with suffering, it ends with happiness. So in some sense, the whole path could be seen as a vehicle for happiness. You know, how do we actually discover a deeper, more enduring and genuine sense of happiness in life? So in meditation practice, when there's this suggestion to smile, this is not like a false smile. It's not that we're papering everything over with a Pollyanna kind of sweetness. Like, oh, everything's fine, just smile and meditate and everything will be okay. For me, it really points to a few different things. One, it points to that spirit of kindness. Right? When we're happy, when there's warmth, when there's care, the face actually takes on a different configuration. Right? I went on a camping trip with a friend of mine many, many, many years ago, and I was in an awful mood for like 4 days. It was a terrible trip. And I took it out on this friend a lot. It was not one of my better moments. And she happened to take a photo of me at one point when we were at one of our campsites and I was like sewing something. And she gave it to me later. And my face was so contorted with anger. If you've ever looked at someone when they're angry, right, it's really very ugly. Not in a societal way of like, oh, you're so beautiful or you're unattractive, but in a very human way, right? Like anger, hatred, they contort our body, our face, and our heart. And in the same way, when you see someone smile, right, when it's genuine, isn't it beautiful? Right? There's something radiant and bright that touches us when it's a genuine smile. So, to invite a subtle smile when we're meditating, the interesting thing about our physiology and the way it interacts with our neurology is that it can go either direction, right? If you're happy, genuinely, we smile. But if you actually put the body in a certain posture, if you start to activate those muscles, it will simulate the feeling. So if you walk around all day like this with your head down and your shoulders, you'll start to feel depressed, even if you're not. Similarly, if you open up your shoulders, look up, you start to feel a little bit uplifted, you smile, it starts to get the juices going. So one aspect of this smile when we meditate to me is starting to invite that spirit of friendship and warmth and happiness, to bring in the tone of kindness to the meditation. It's like priming the pump a little bit. Another aspect of it is about enjoyment. So enjoyment is a very key part of meditation practice that we often overlook or don't give enough attention to. Right? It's hard enough to be alive. And then to take away all the distractions and try to sit there and be with your own mind for 20 minutes or half an hour or longer, it's not easy. So we need some enjoyment. We need some sustenance. So this is some of what I was trying to point to throughout our evening so far today with the movement, really enjoying the movement, the simplicity of sitting and being quiet. Right? These are more subtle pleasures than an ice cream cone or a great movie or a fancy meal. Just the simplicity, the ease, the stillness. There's a certain enjoyment that we can develop a taste for, but we have to notice it, we have to look there. So that subtle smile for me in my own practice has really reminded me to appreciate that which is pleasant in meditation that's so easy to overlook. Because we're so accustomed to more gross pleasures, grosser sensory pleasures, things that are intense, that have a big hit to them, that really get us going. And then we overlook, like, wow, I don't have a headache right now. I don't have a toothache. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about appreciating your non-toothache. Right? It's quite lovely to not have a toothache. Brings a smile. So this sense of appreciating the subtlety. I think another part of this smile, going a little bit deeper, is it's a smile of insight. There's a pleasure that comes from being on the path of understanding. When we understand our life from a different perspective. when we understand the power of the path and the gift that it presents in our life, to even have a practice, to have a way to come to stillness, to reflect, to put things down, to strengthen healthy, wholesome qualities. Such a blessing. So there's this, there's both an appreciation, but also a knowing, whatever insight, whatever wisdom we have, we've realized in our life and in our practice, to bring that to the fore and allow it to nourish us. So when I look at these different levels, just looking at the smile as one kind of way of starting to explore, unpack happiness, and I consider like what we're living through in, in these times today, there's a lot of relevance, right? What does it mean to be happy? Like for me, what's the value of kindness when institutions are starting to come apart, when there's no social safety net in our society? You know, kindness and generosity becomes that much more important and necessary among us in our communities. It's the value of appreciation, enjoyment. Not cheap, gross enjoyment of, you know, buying another thing or consuming something else, but the enjoyment of the simple pleasures of life. The enjoyment of perhaps things that are not so based on consuming. We need that enjoyment to have resilience, to face the difficulties of this world. In times of stress and challenge, we go down if we don't nourish ourselves from the most basic levels of rest and food and exercise and human connection to spiritual nourishment, food for the heart, food for the soul, right? So as we face different challenges, and you know, we are incredibly fortunate and privileged to live in the United States, in this particular area of the United States. I don't know how many of you follow international news. There's 8 million people in South India who haven't had running water for months in Chennai, in Madras, because of climate change. Because the monsoons were half the amount this year, and they depend on rainwater. So halfway through, municipal water ran out. It's the sixth largest city in India, you know? This is happening now. So what are the inner resources we need to face these changes, right? We need some juice. We need some pleasure. And not, again, not pleasure that comes from harm or consuming, but pleasure that's sustainable. So happiness becomes even more important in the face of hardship and change. And then this sense of the pleasure of insight, of understanding. So in the Buddha's teachings, and this is what I'll be exploring on Friday in much more depth at Spirit Rock, we can understand or categorize the kinds of happiness that the Buddha talks about in four different ways in the Buddhist path. And so it begins with an acknowledgement of worldly happiness. Worldly happiness, worldly pleasure, is pleasure that comes from sensory experience. Beautiful sights, beautiful sounds, beautiful tastes, beautiful smells, beautiful touches, right? Pleasing things. And the Buddha is very clear about this is real. Like, we wouldn't be stuck here. We wouldn't get spun around and chase after things if there wasn't some actual pleasure and happiness in the material world. Called the five chords of sense pleasure, our five senses and the pleasure that they bring. So this is obviously limited, though, because they pass. So this this is what most humans spend our lives thinking about happiness as. And this is what I invite us to reflect on tonight, is what does happiness mean to you? What's its role in your life, and what's its role in the changes we're experiencing? And so, you know, the vast portion of our society and the messages that we get in the media really sort of, this is happiness, right? It's having the nice house and the nice clothes and the attractive spouse and the whole package, right? And so many other things that society kind of places on it. It means that you're thin and that you're young and that you're white and all that. So the offering of contemplative practice, and this is obviously not unique to the Buddhist path, but that's the kind of context we're exploring here, is of a different kind of happiness, of something that's deeper, that's more sustaining. And so the fundamental split, as I understand it, is worldly happiness is the happiness that comes from getting something. It's the happiness that comes from consuming, from having, from obtaining. Whether it's buying, drinking, eating, smelling, seeing, right? Or even obtaining our goals. We're still getting something. We're becoming. We're in that realm of I am here and I want to be there. And when I get there, there's a payoff. There's a little kind of burst of pleasure. This is worldly happiness. There's another kind of happiness called unworldly happiness. That's much more nuanced and broad. And this is the happiness that comes from letting go. From going in the opposite direction. Rather than getting something and obtaining and having and consuming, it's the happiness that comes from the opposite. So, and this gets unpacked in so many different ways on the Buddhist path. So the first layer of this unworldly happiness is the happiness of the wholesome, the healthy, in the heart and the mind. Begins with sila, ethical conduct, not causing harm, living a life of integrity, which is a practice of letting go. We don't think of it that way, but to not cause harm, you need to let go of certain impulses towards greed, self-centeredness, hatred, accumulation, lashing out. So there's the happiness of integrity. There's the happiness of cultivating other wholesome qualities in our heart and mind. Generosity, kindness, patience, truthfulness, compassion. And these bring a certain quality of joy and happiness to the heart, right? How does it feel to give? How does it feel to help? How does it feel to listen to a friend when they're in need? How does it feel to take a deep breath when you're feeling impatient and just let it go? There's a happiness, there's a pleasure that comes. It's like, okay, I surrender. So this is the first layer of unworldly happiness, a happiness that's subtler. It comes from how we're relating to life, how we're living, rather than what we're getting. This then takes us further on the path to the next layer of happiness, which is deeper. And each of these layers of happiness comes from a deeper kind of letting go. And this is the trope throughout the Buddha's teachings. Is the Buddha says, a wise person, if by giving up one kind of happiness, you gain a deeper, more fuller happiness, that's wisdom, right? So if you can give up one thing for something that's even better, you're going in the right direction. But you've got to give up that one thing for something better. Like, if none of us had ever let go of our blankie or our, you know, teddy bear when we were kids, right? Think of all the things that we wouldn't get to experience and enjoy and know in life. Right? You need to let go of one thing in order to experience something different, something new. So the foundation of the path is living ethically, cultivating wholesome qualities. This brings a certain kind of happiness. But it's still within the world. It's still within this realm of time and place and past and future. So the next layer of happiness is the happiness of concentration, which comes from another kind of letting go. And we've each tasted this in meditation. You wouldn't be here in this room if you hadn't tasted some of this. Because it's not easy to sit still and look at your own mind and be with your own body. But we get these glimpses, and if you have that capacity, some people naturally have a capacity for concentration, then perhaps it's gone deeper for you, but we get these glimpses of calm, of stillness, of ease, of pleasure. When things get quiet, when they get still, when everything comes together and the world falls away. Right? This is the happiness of concentration. The mind becomes secluded and free from the torments of its confusion and its chasing and its resisting and its swings of energy and crashing. So the happiness of concentration is a deeper level of happiness. And then there's the liberating happiness that's the promise of the path, which is the happiness of insight, the happiness of understanding. And this comes in stages as we make progress along the path in small and large ways. Every moment of insight, of understanding. At some point, there's a kind of release. There's a happiness and a freedom. It's not always right away. I was speaking with one of you after last week, where I mentioned insight, about the pain that comes sometimes with insight. When we see things clearly, when we see that, when there's insight into dukkha, into suffering and loss, that's painful. And as the heart lets go, there's a deeper understanding that comes. And with that comes a kind of peace, a kind of happiness. This is the happiness of putting something down, like you've been carrying a load, a heavy bag, or just being out in the world, right? And you get home and it's just something goes, ah. You know that feeling, right? What is that? We put something down energetically. It's like, I'm home now. I don't have to deal the traffic and the people and the noise and the demands. There's that peace, that happiness, that ease that comes when we put something down. And the purpose of insight is letting go. And when we let go, there's that relief and there's a kind of happiness that comes. So I want to invite us to shift gears now and to just start to reflect on some of these themes. What does happiness mean to you? What sustains you in life? How does the happiness that comes from our practice, how does it translate into service, into responding to challenges in our life, whether it's challenges on the personal level, right? Whether it's in your work, you work with people, or there's someone in your family or community who's struggling or suffering, or it's challenges on a larger scale in your organization, your workplace, our community, these different sort of nesting circles that we inhabit. So my suggestion is that we form groups of three or four. Once it gets larger than four, there won't be as much time for each person to share and reflect. Everything's optional. We're all adults. If you don't want to talk to anyone, you don't have to. You know, it's a beautiful view. You can sit and contemplate on your own or write. But it's a wonderful way to build community and to learn from one another. So let's take about a little more than 10 minutes. And I just invite you to turn towards folks near you and form groups of three or four to explore this question. What is happiness? What does it mean to you? And how does it inform your life? So let's continue to build on what we've just discussed in small groups. And what was like an insight or nugget of wisdom, something that you or your group came to that you'd like to share with the rest of us? Or was there a question or theme that came out that was particularly poignant or meaningful? And so we'll send the mic around so everyone can hear. Thanks, Mary.
Just quickly for me, I'd say it's remembering to practice gratitude.
Mm.
That, and somebody had mentioned in our group about enough.
Mm.
Like them being enough, and for me, I'm a greed type, is that I have enough.
Mm-hmm.
And just being appreciative of,
yeah,
of this simple, taking a hot shower in the morning.
Right.
I remember that every morning.
Yeah, thank you. Other insights, things that you discussed, themes that you'd like to share?
I can't resist. So we said each in our own way, I heard the theme of just remembering. And I remember Arena Weissman saying to me many years ago in Santa Fe, that's the practice, just mm-hmm. to remember. And then, of course, going back to the body.
Mm.
And whatever that is for any one person. So I call them antidotes, you know, having our own bits and pieces of practice to counter conditioning
mm-hmm.
and the habitual neurological mind streams. So I think that was the thing that we all sort of, was that the thing?
Other themes, comments?
Well, I knew that I was very happy with chocolate. That was definitely a happy most any time.
That's the thing about sense pleasures is they're very reliable. Right? It's like you know what you're going to get.
But on some other level at the very end, I began to wonder, well, how is it possible to be happy with what is?
Mm.
To accept
yes.
what is as, I don't know that it's a joyous happiness, but there's some level of acceptance
mm-hmm.
That comes from being able, and happiness to be from being able
yeah.
to
yes.
accept what is.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, that was a...
Thank you.
There's specific examples,
yeah.
but that's not
yeah.
the point. It's really
yeah.
that.
We had a lot of discussion about what makes us happy
mm.
Without any kind of conclusions, except that we all realized that we had all outgrown the notion that new cars would do the trick.
I think one of the interesting...
Unless it's a Tesla.
I think one of the interesting things about this exploration for me is that, which I think both of you touch on, is this sense of how do we define happiness?
Yeah.
Right? And is it feeling good? Right? Or is it something else? Like, is there a deeper happiness that's not about pleasant states?
Yeah, I think, well, first off, I just want to disagree with Bill about the new car. My old car was like, what, 2000? My old car was like 15, 16 years old, and it was really breaking down all the time. And then we got a new one, a smooth ride. That was nice. I would say lasting.
Yes.
But, so one example that I talked about here in the group was going to see Hamilton, the show.
Mm.
And great show, wonderful, exciting, all kinds of, works on many different levels and all that kind of thing. And I came out of there, it was exciting, it was quite a spectacle, and it was like, wow, it was just not nearly as satisfying as a good Dharma talk. Seriously.
Yeah. I had a different experience at Hamilton. I hear you though, yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, but what was different about it and what was so moving about it for me wasn't the fanfare and the excitement. It was I was in tears, but because there was something about the mastery, the performances, and the embodiment of the dedication in terms of the dance and the singing and the that was like bearing witness to human artistry, sort of at such a pinnacle, was so moving for my heart that there was a similar movement in my heart to a deep Dharma talk, because it was this expression of something, you know, so alive and real.
I get it.
And not to in any way invalidate your experience. Maybe time for one or two more. There's over here, Mary.
I'm just wondering whether there needs to be, you know, it seems when I hear the, you know, pursuing materialistic things as bringing a worldly happiness, but then you have to give that up to get deeper happiness. And I'm sure maybe on some level that's true, but I don't feel a conflict, really.
Yeah.
I don't feel an inner conflict with, you know, the gratitude for the wealth that I've accumulated or the good fortune. I mean, just tremendous good luck and good fortune that I'm not living in India with no water. I mean, it's just good luck. You know, it's not anything I've done. But, you know, having a sense of fulfillment and pride and happiness with my life as it is, and also looking for those deep, more deeply sustaining elements to just bring a tremendous fullness.
The question that you're pointing to is, what does it mean to give up? And that's a deep exploration. And you know, we could spend a lot of time going there, so thank you. There were two more comments here, so let's make these the last two. One, and then over in the corner, two.
Mark, we've talked about community and happiness, engaging with others.
Yeah.
Just to address your thing about Hamilton, the engagement and commitment to the human project.
Mm.
I don't know how you fit that in. It is letting go of the sense, because it's letting go of your smaller wants and desires.
Mm.
Anyway.
Yeah. No? Okay, great. So let's bring our evening to a close then. So I invite you to let the words start to settle and turn your attention back inwards.